And we have our TSN hockey insider, Bob McKenzie, on the line as well. How you doing, Bob?
Excellent. How are you guys doing? By the way, Pierre LeBrun loves that song.
Oh, it's such a good song.
Oh, he loves it. He goes crazy for it.
It's a hand-clapping, feet-stomping kind of tune. So I have some questions that I'm prepared to ask you, but then looking at my Twitter, I have to then ask you this question. So there's a couple fans tweeting me right now, and I can't say I blame them. They're Hamilton. They're, you know, from Hamilton, and I'm assuming some of them are, you know, they're obviously going to the game tonight, and they're very disappointed in the lineup that the Leafs are putting out. We know Mike Babcock has said, you know, the game on Thursday and the game that's going to come up on Saturday, that's going to be as close to his NHL lineup. He said Friday night was going to be the closest to the AHL lineup. You know, but this is kind of tough when it comes to preseason because, you know, I mean, coaches obviously are trying to put together their lineup and rest players when they need to rest and showcase players who need to be showcased. But the Leafs are a huge draw. And, you know, I think we can agree that's why they play in different places too, right? St. Catharines, Saskatoon, now they're playing in Hamilton. I mean, is this just kind of an unfortunate set of circumstances when it comes to the preseason?
Yeah, 3-3. And also, you're dealing with the circumstance of the Detroit Red Wings have a little something to do with this. And they've got a home game on Saturday night. They've got a so-called neutral site Leaf home game on Friday night in Hamilton. So what are they going to do? Are they going to save their best players to put on the ice for their home game before their fans on a Saturday night at the Joe? Yes, they are. Are they going to put in a more American League lineup tonight? Yes. As soon as Mike Babcock hears that, he looks at the schedule and says, okay, we're playing the Montreal Canadiens on Thursday. Montreal's icing basically their opening night lineup, other than the fact Max Pacioretty was ill and couldn't play last night. Shea Weber's first game, Carey Price's first game. I've got to use this game as a major evaluation tool. I know that Detroit's going to be sending me fodder on Friday night, so I guess I'm going to have to counter with some fodder, although even some of the fodder guys, you know, it's their last chance to show what they've got and try and catch his attention. No game's ever useless. And then on Saturday night, come back with the last game of the preseason against a good Detroit team that'll probably be as close to their opening night lineup as you could possibly get. So, yeah, you know, it sucks to be in the middle of that three-game preseason sandwich, and unfortunately for Hamilton, that's the way it goes.
Bob, do you think after what we've seen so far in the preseason, obviously there's two games left, as you said, Saturday's game is going to be more like the roster we saw last night and odds on to be similar to what we're going to see on the opening night. So do you think what we've seen so far, that the Leafs management and coaches feel the same way they did regarding the young guys and really, I guess, the whole team moving forward starting the year as they did before camp started?
I think so, for the most part. I think they're pretty pragmatic and realistic guys. Now, you always allow yourself the unfettered optimism of a new season. Oh, everything's going to be great. The kids are going to be awesome. The veterans are going to be great. Everything's going to be beautiful. And then you play a game like last night where the Leafs were hopelessly outclassed on every level, and the kids really looked like kids. Nylander was turning pucks over and not winning very many battles at all. Mitch Marner got caught flat-footed on that beautiful Galchenyuk goal and didn't have that same sort of zip in his game that he's had through much of the preseason. You know, Austin Matthews gets his goal, but on balance, I mean, you wouldn't have gone to that game and come away and gone, oh, wow, Austin Matthews, this guy's by far the best rookie in the National Hockey League this year, which is the way a lot of Leaf fans felt. And that's not to say that he won't be, but it wasn't last night. And even the veteran players that play, I mean, partway through the game, I said to somebody, has anybody seen Kadri in this game? Because I hadn't. So it went on and on and on. And it was from top to bottom a pretty weak effort. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of nights like that because, you know, if you're going to put the kids, you're going to put 18 and 19 and 20-year-olds in your lineup, some nights that's what you're going to get, especially if they're all giving you a clunker on the same night. But it'll be up to Mike Babcock to show how much work he's got to do and get their level up so that they don't have games like that.
Yeah, and we played a clip earlier of Austin Matthews saying that they showed their youth on that night. And I know we've been mentioning some names like Hunwick, Polak, like. They're listed as the veterans or the guys, you know, to be the voices of leadership. But we've also kind of discussed this ad nauseum that if you're also a player that doesn't get a lot of minutes, which almost seems, you know, Polak is playing tonight, so if that's any indication of, you know, NHL lineups yesterday and then tomorrow and he's in the lineup tonight, I don't know you know, did Connor Carrick kind of beat him out of that sixth spot? We'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, if they have low minutes or healthy scratches, you know, how loud can their voices really be? Are you still looking for one of these young guys to stand out in that regard, in that leadership sense?
Well, you know, whether it's Marner or Nylander or Matthews, their job's to come in and play at the NHL level. Their job's not to lead or do any of that stuff. You do expect leadership from Kadri and Bozak and Van Riemsdyk, the guys that are perceived as core pieces of the Leaf puzzle and have been here long enough to know what the drill is. And are really, you know, Kadri just turned 26. I don't have JVR's age, but I'm sure he's right in that wheelhouse too. Mm-hmm. And so you know, and Bozak's not a young guy anymore. And so all those guys are going to have prominent roles on the team. And, you know, Komarov would be another one. You know, Hyman's only going to play his first full year in the NHL. So, again, you want him to concentrate on just being an NHL player. But he's also, what, almost 24 years old and that. So, well, you know, I think all that stuff finds its own level. As far as Lyke and Greening and McCulloch and Polak, those veteran guys, basically, if they're on the team, then they will help to mentor the kids. That'll be their job. But to your point, you know, I don't anticipate any of those guys having a frontline role on this team because mm-hmm. you've got enough kids and enough of Van Riemsdyk, Komarov, Kadri, and Bozak to fill your roster spots. And then you got a whole raft of kids. So those bubble veterans are going to have to earn their spot and then help out and lead and mentor in any way that they can.
We've been focusing a lot on Nikita Zaitsev just because he was the guy they signed, you know, in the summertime. He's the guy that's played really well for Team Russia. I wouldn't say he's disappointed, but do you think then that Connor Carrick has just kind of flown under the radar? Like, do you think Carrick has been the one to essentially snag that sixth spot over Roman Polak?
It would certainly seem that way, but we also know, you know, it's not very long until somebody gets injured. It's not very long until somebody has a clunker of a game, and you know, I would assume the fact that they signed Polak to an NHL deal in the offseason suggests to me that he'll be one of their seven. And I haven't heard yet, and I don't think Babcock's decided, and if he has, he hasn't shared it. Are they going with 7D or might they go with 8? I think they'll probably go with 14 forwards and 7D and the two goalies. But you never know. They could go 13 forwards and 8D. And that really depends, too. You know, Corrado's had a good camp. But coming in, he was sort of identified as the number 8 guy. And you could easily turn around and say, well, Corrado should be ahead of Polak. And I might grant you that. But, you know, the fact that they felt the need to go out and sign Polak would suggest to me that they want him there mm-hmm. for the veteran presence and that he'll be one of their 7 or 8. He'll be one of their 8 for sure, but I think he'll be one of the 7 too. So that might leave Frankie on the outside looking in with a date with waivers with him. But we'll have to see how all that plays out over these next couple of days and obviously when they submit their final roster by 5 p.m. on Tuesday.
So going on top of what we're talking about as far as how the roster is going to shake out, what job do you still think is up for grabs? Obviously, based on the top 9 that they have, it would be somebody on the fourth line, and depending on if it's one or two extra forwards, that could kind of change the makeup of that. But who do you see kind of filling out those last 3 or 4 spots?
Well, yeah, and we looked at their top 9 last night, and in no particular order, let's go Hyman, Kadri, Komarov, Martin, Matthews, Nylander, Bozak, Van Riemsdyk, and Marner. Those are 9 forwards. Those 9 guys, in my mind, are all guaranteed spots amongst the you know 13 or 14 forwards they decide to keep. So you've got an entire fourth line and an extra spot or two, depending on how many forwards they keep. And who do you have for those spots? Well, you've got the veterans like Greening, McCulloch. You could put Peter Holland in that veteran category, but he's obviously a younger veteran. Connor Brown is probably the most prominent quote-unquote young guy that hasn't been an NHL regular that would be very much in the running for that spot. And you've got 2 X factors and that you don't have to deal with right now, But at some point in time, they may come into play, and that would be Nikita Soshnikov, who, if he hadn't been injured and missed all of training camp and have to start the year in the American Hockey League, he would be on the roster. There's no question in my mind about that. You would go from 9 guaranteed guys to 10 guaranteed guys. So at some point, whether it's a week or two or a month into the season, he's coming back, but by then you could have injuries and who knows. And Josh Leibo would be the other one who requires waivers to go to the minors. And I think the Leafs thought he was going to be an NHL consideration for them, but he hasn't played yet in camp. He might before it's all said and done. We'll see. But again, he's way behind the eight ball, and that might cost him. So, you know, I don't know what the mixture is going to be, but I would say this. I would be shocked, and I've been shocked before, and I've been wrong before, but Connor Brown, to me, is going to get an opportunity to have one of those fourth-line spots or depth spots on the roster. And then it's a matter of filtering in, well, do you keep Holland over, you know, like Greening or McCulloch? I don't know the answer to that question. Which of Greening, like, and McCulloch do you keep? And which ones are you know, waived or traded or whatever you can find? But that's sort of how it shapes up, I think. There might be the odd outlier with the Marlies, I guess, but for the most part, I think those are the names that I mentioned. And as I said, things get even more complicated if you throw Soshnikov or Leivo's name into the mix.
Well, yeah, so we'll see Leivo tonight, but it's been interesting because I would almost say that his name would have been at the forefront of, you know, when camp started, to be the guy where do you want him over Colin Greening, Peter Holland, like kind of go down that
exactly.
list. And then, yeah, you know, he's apparently dealing with an injury, hasn't been showing. Babcock said he hasn't been, you know, impressed. So he's playing tonight in what's supposed to be the AHL lineup, and all of a sudden the storyline flips and you got Connor Brown, who perhaps is making a run for it. But going back to another topic you guys discussed last night, and is whether or not you liked Nylander or Marner on the wing with Matthews. Babcock saying he wants to start Matthews with Nylander. You seem to like Nylander with Matthews. In fact, they're practicing today on a line. It's Matthews between Hyman and Nylander. Why do you like Nylander over Marner?
Well, I don't think it makes a big difference one way or the other, other than the fact I think they feel like Nylander's played a year of professional hockey, and he has at least an understanding of what Mike Babcock wants for him when he doesn't have the puck. Might not always do it, but he certainly knows what the drill is playing for Mike Babcock. And does have a year of professional hockey, and he's well aware of the Leafs system and what have you. So to put Matthews with Marner might work really well because Marner's such a smart player, and he reads and reacts so well and makes everybody on the ice better. And he dishes the puck extremely well. And Matthews is a great playmaker, but he's a better shooting center than even as a playmaker. So they might be a perfect natural fit, but I still think Mike Babcock wants to insulate Marner a little bit, and if he puts him on a line with a veteran winger in Van Riemsdyk and a veteran center in Bozak, then that gives him some insulation and doesn't leave him exposed, whereas if you put two 19-year-olds at Matthews at center and Marner on the right side, and then whoever you put on the left side, whether it's Matt Martin, and I think that's who they initially planned to put there, or Hyman, it doesn't really matter, you're still dealing with a pretty young line anyway. So I think it's just a matter of spreading it around and trying to protect the kids as best you can under the circumstances.
Before we let you go, some thoughts around the league here. And I know you've been talking a lot about Nail Yakupov. What's the storyline there? As we know, the Edmonton Oilers are obviously trying to turn a new leaf.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question the Oilers are trying to trade him. They hope to trade him and maybe expect to trade him before the season begins. I think his time in Edmonton is up, as near as I can tell. I always allow for the possibility you get injuries. I see Kajula's injured in Edmonton. He might be out for a while, so maybe it opens the door. But I think everybody wants to move on. I think Nail wants to move on from Edmonton. I think the Oilers would like to move on without him. Peter Chiarelli says he's not going to give him away, but his market value is not exactly off the charts either. You know, there was a report out of Chicago yesterday that the deal was effectively done for him to become a Blackhawk, that it was imminent, and that they were just working paperwork and trying to finalize a couple of things. When I saw that, I immediately picked up the call phone and made my calls as I do. And my best information was that wasn't the case. The deal wasn't imminent. The deal was not done. But certainly the Blackhawks have had interest in Neil Yakupov and are not ruling out the possibility of having interest that could lead to a trade. But the Blackhawks are trying to evaluate their kids, and Astroza, Hartman, Mott, Schmaltz, and even the 19-year-old kid out of the Quebec League they signed as a free agent, Fortin. All these kids have been good. They want to give him a bit of a shot here and see. Stan Bowman will look at his roster before they set it on Tuesday. And if he feels like, yeah, you know what, the price for a guy like Yakupov isn't exorbitant, if Edmonton's willing to eat enough salary to make it worthwhile, why not bring him in and maybe put him on the left side with Anisimov and Kane? So not done, but a consideration for Chicago, but by no means guaranteed. And keep in mind, Edmonton is talking to other teams about Yakupov, and if they find the right deal, I don't think they'll hesitate to pull the trigger.
P.K. Subban, a quote coming out, he was giving an interview to a Sports Illustrated, and he said, people said it was a hockey trade. I think it's the furthest from that. I think it was a personality trade. This, to me, is no surprise. I mean, this is something everyone was talking about and speculating the second the trade happened between him and Shea Weber. But are you just, you know, maybe surprised that he's just saying it now before the season starts?
Well, he was actually, I think, as the interview was done, as I understand it, Alex Pruitt from SI spent a few days or a week or something with in the first week that PK actually moved to Nashville.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
It was actually, I think it was, the context was that it was a little bit earlier than this. I don't know if it's weeks ago, but it wasn't just, he didn't just say it this week. Having said that, he obviously feels it, he believes it, and on many levels, he's absolutely right. But what I would say about this is, in the National Hockey League, some players have an on-ice personality and some players have an off-ice personality. For example, Patrick, on the ice, was a very skilled, flamboyant player who played with a lot of flair. And I don't know that Patrick would say that he carries himself running around, you know, with as much flair off the ice as he does on. So the personality, and that's not a criticism, I'm just saying that there's often a big difference between the way a player carries himself on the ice and how he plays the game versus how he carries himself off the ice. Therefore, his off-ice personality or his on-ice performance and persona. And in the case of PK Subban, I would say they're one and the same. And you know, people tell me if I'm wrong. But he's a high-risk, flamboyant, offensively gifted guy who doesn't do things quietly on the ice. And he's very much the same way off the ice. Now, I don't disagree with PK when he says it's personality-driven, because I don't think that his personality was beloved by the regime there with Marc Bergevin and Michel Therrien. And I don't think we were ever shy about speculating that in the past. But they're not giving away a $9 million player, defenseman, who's got the gifts, the athletic gifts that PK Subban's got, just to get rid of the big personality off the ice. They wanted to bring in a defenseman who has a personality on the ice that is more in line with the way Michel Therrien wants the game played, and that's Shea Weber. So, you know, I don't think it's just a case of, we don't like the way PK handled himself in the dressing room and off the ice. They didn't like the way he handled himself on the ice, as good as he was, because they want a different style of player. And they got it in Shea Weber. And hopefully we won't have to talk about it for too much longer, because I'm not sure you can say much more than what's been said over the course of from the time the trade's been made. But, I mean, it's going to be a talking point for a long time. But I'll tell you, Weber looked pretty good last night.
He did. But Michel Therrien, what a potty pooper. Doesn't like personality.
I don't think I've ever seen him smile that kind of.
It's okay. We don't need to. Bob, a pleasure as always.
Thanks, guys.